Hello and welcome to another episode of the Startup Operator Roundup. I'm Roshan Karyapa.
And I'm Gunjan Saha, and together we break down the biggest headlines from India's growing startup ecosystem. If you're a regular listener of this channel, then please consider sharing this video with your friends. And if you're tuning into the Startup Operator for the first time, please subscribe to our channel, for we have fantastic conversations with founders, investors, and other people from the startup ecosystem. In this week's roundup, of course, the first big item that we'll be discussing is the entire fiasco between RBI and Paytm. It has been a while, and this has allowed us to separate the myth from the facts, so we'll be able to give you a clear perspective on what's happening. Last week, Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella also visited Mumbai and made some major announcements on the AI front. Country Delight, which has been pioneering on the milk delivery space, gave its investors, especially Orise Ventures, a 45x returns on their investment.
Wow.
And this has been from a partial exit, not even a complete exit. The TV industry urges the Ministry of Information and Broadcasting to exclude online streaming players like Amazon and Netflix from the broadcasting bill. This is an interesting move. And lastly, the good news for Karnataka people. The government has announced that there'll be uniform fares for taxis that includes the likes of Uber and Ola, and there'll be no more surge pricing. So we'll see how that will impact the cab availability in Bangalore at least. So let's get started in this roundup. But before that, this has also been a big week for India. The Bharat Ratna list has been announced. Roshan, did you get a chance to look at that?
Yeah, three very well-deserving winners of the highest civilian award in Bharat. My favorite is, of course, former Prime Minister P.V. Narasimha Rao. He's the first Prime Minister that I recognize, right? I mean, I was probably 5 or 6 years old when the 91 reforms happened. And what people don't realize is the amount of political capital that was required to sort of like push that through, right? I mean, not just the economics and so on and so forth. Yeah, and he was a fantastic man, a statesman and a scholar. He could speak about, I don't know, 12 or 15 languages.
Wow.
Had a very long career in politics, in service of the nation, I should say. Was not very well treated within his own party and in his own time, right? He was pretty, he was sidelined and everything. But this is a fitting honor, I should say. And, you know, very big-hearted of Prime Minister Modi to sort of recognize someone from the other side, right? And this is what I think national politics should be, right? I mean, recognized irrespective of party lines and so on and so forth. So I'm very, very happy about that. I think more people should kind of, you know, read Vinay Sitapati's book, Half Lion, on P.V. Narasimha Rao. I've just started on it and, you know, hopefully, I mean, I'll gain a little more knowledge on PVNR. But yeah, fantastic, fantastic honor, I should say.
And also in a neighboring country, the elections are on. Are you following that?
Well, I mean, some chaotic news coming from there that, you know, the elections are rigged and so on and so forth. Really, I mean, the country is kind of unraveling, right? I mentioned, you know, watching a podcast sometime back and, you know, funny as it sounds, it's actually pretty crazy, you know. I mean, and it's, there's a lot of despair in Pakistan, and I really hope that, you know, they're able to fix their circumstances and, you know, get back to being a sane country, at least, if possible, that is. Yeah.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what's happening in our neighborhood while, you know, very soon we'll be entering our elections period. But anyway, coming back home to some of the big news, the recent clash between RBI and Paytm has definitely garnered a lot of attention from the startup ecosystem, from the media. And all of this began when, you know, RBI initially raised concerns about Paytm's postpaid feature. This was Paytm's foray into BNPL, and of course, BNPL has not really fared out well in the country. The RBI has, since the beginning, has raised concerns over it. They are saying, RBI in its latest sanctions against Paytm is saying that this is because of persistent non-compliances and continued material supervisory concerns in the bank. And the RBI did not specify further to it. Paytm Payments Bank is restricted from adding customers in March 2022 due to similar concerns, but they continued doing business with existing customers. Now, RBI has told the company to wind down most of these businesses by the end of this month. Amidst this regulatory tussle, Paytm is facing setbacks from investors, its valuation is taking a dive, share prices are plunging, and this of course raises a lot of questions over Paytm's growth trajectory and the market reputation. But despite these setbacks, I really think Paytm will always remain as a pioneer in India's fintech space. Hopefully, all of these controversies and actions will settle down. But what are your thoughts on this RBI-Paytm showdown?
Let me caveat my response with a few things, right? So first, I absolutely admire VSS, right? A phenomenal entrepreneur, really a trailblazer, I should say. I mean, and he's been at it for 20 plus years. And I would say, I mean, he's a model to aspire for, you know, any other builders out there, right? I mean, I remember, you know, the early days when they were doing some mobile VAS services and so on and so forth. And then, you know, the inflection point with demonetization and so on and so forth. So I absolutely admire and respect VSS. And I think Paytm, you know, you cannot discount the amount of change they've brought in, right? I mean, especially post-demonetization and so on, they've really pioneered the payments ecosystem in India. And that's taken a lot of time, money, effort, innovation, what have you, right? Now, with that out of the way, look, fintech business is extremely compliance heavy. We've had more than a few fintech founders on the podcast. And, you know, one of the questions I always ask them is, you know, what is it like working with these banks? What is it like working with the regulators? You know, what are those compliance norms that you have to meet? What are you doing to enable your business for that and so on? And everyone kind of respects that, right? Because that is a necessary condition to operate in this fintech ecosystem. While it may seem unfair that, you know, Paytm has been asked to stop operations and they've clamped down pretty heavily, from what reports have emerged, right, and we've heard from the RBI governor as well, that, you know, this was a long time coming, right? I mean, they've been warned for, you know, dating back to almost 2 years and even up, you know, 6 months of continued, you know, warnings as well on the regulatory front, and they were not heeded, right? Now, should the law apply differently to Paytm because it's such an innovative company? I don't think so, right? If they have not operated under the legal purview, right? I mean, then they obviously need to face the consequences of that, and which is what is happening. Now, I am optimistic about Paytm in the sense that I know that they can fix those things and get back to being the fantastic brand and company they are. And I'm really rooting for them, right? But in terms of the action itself, well, their payments bank was banned from taking any more deposits and so on. And the major point of contention here is that, you know, the KYC for the wallet, right, was used to add these customers for the Paytm bank, right? The payment bank itself. And that was a gray area, right? Because technically these two things had to be siloed, right? I mean, the payments bank and the Paytm had to be, Paytm wallet business and merchant business had to be siloed. But that wasn't the case, right? And, you know, RBI came down heavily on that and sort of banned them. Now, every other UPI provider, whether it is Google Pay or Phone Pay, etc., has tied up with another bank, right? I mean, so for instance, I think Google Pay is tied up with HDFC and ICICI, Phone Pay with Yes Bank and so on, right? So the UPI address itself will, you know, be OKICICI or OKHDFC or YBL or something of that sort. But in Paytm's case, it was Paytm Bank itself, right? Now, because Paytm Bank has, you know, been asked to cease operations, the whole UPI infrastructure is also affected, right? Now, imagine going to all of these merchants and sort of changing the QR code.
That's not a small task.
It's not a small task. I mean, you're talking about hundreds of crores of, you know, logistics expenses on that front, right? And that is if they agree to do that and if they're still with you. Right.
And not to forget that, you know, there are other players in the market who will
be more than happy to tap this business. Right. And then now, before that, imagine, like, you know, having to tie up with another bank now. Right. Whether an ICICI or whoever else. That whole process itself is 3 months. Now they have to crush it down to, you know, I think by February 29th, they've been given time to sort of do that. So they have to figure a way to do that. Right. Tie up with that other bank. So it's a humongous challenge in front of them, you know, and it seems very, very difficult to sort of overcome, I would say. I said, you know, when the Paytm shares tanked about a year back or so, that, you know, at the right valuation, Paytm could be an amazing business for something like a Tata or a Reliance to sort of pick up, right? For a couple of billion dollars and change. Now, I mean, the way Jio Financial shares have been rallying, and, you know, with the supposed rumors of HDFC being interested and so on, I mean, that may very well turn out to be the case. But everyone will want to find out, you know, what their loan book is like, right? And what is the amount of regulatory hurdles here and so on, right? And overall, I think the other aspect that people will be sort of wary about is the Chinese investor thing, right? I mean, Ant Financial owned something like 10% in Paytm. You know, there were data concerns in terms of, you know, the Chinese government having access to Indian records and so on and so forth. Now, what I hear is Paytm has done a lot to assuage these concerns, but those still sort of remain, right? Mm. So all of that put together, it seems like a very, very thorny situation for Paytm to get out of. I'm really rooting for them. I'm really hoping that they're able to come out of this clean and resume operations. But it's a very useful lesson to every entrepreneur out there, right? Whether you're operating in fintech or otherwise. See, oftentimes businesses are founded in that gray area, and you really, really have to go out of your way to be compliant, right? Because something like this, an externality which can kill your business, really is something that, you know, you don't want to have to factor in, you know. Have you bought Paytm shares?
No, I had, but I sold it maybe in the nick of time.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit of a, you know, catch a flying...
But it's interesting,
right? Catch a falling knife kind of a situation right now, you know?
Yeah, I mean, so, I've been considering of, you know, investing in the company given the share prices have tanked so much. But yeah, still waiting to see how this plays out.
Yeah.
But it's also interesting that the entire fintech ecosystem has, you know, gotten together to support Paytm, right? There was news that a group of founders have written a letter to the Prime Minister Modi, Finance Minister Nirmala Sitharaman, and the Reserve Bank of India, urging them to reconsider sanctions against Paytm and engage in constructive dialogues with the fintech ecosystem. Now, while the support, of course, is applaudable, but I don't know whether if you really want to, you know, rub off in the wrong way with the RBI. But keeping that aside, the RBI is also keeping, you know, the best interests of consumers in mind. They are meeting with NHAI, NPCI and other stakeholders to chart an alternate course for the migration of Paytm users. They are convening a meeting to facilitate a smooth transition of users, and they're taking proactive steps to ensure that minimal disruptions happen to users and, you know, strengthen the confidence that users have in the digital India story.
It's a lot, right? I mean, I think they have, what, 35 million users or something of that sort? Maybe more. 350 million users, I think, right? Overall. And, you know, Paytm FastTag has found, like, very wide adoption. Yeah. Right? And the wallet is, you know, one of the, you know, most popular wallets as
Even
well.
Even the merchant base is one of the largest
among... Largest merchant bases. So, you know, what we don't want from this situation is for people to kind of get spooked about all of these digital payments and whatnot, right? So, I really feel like I hope the regulators work out a solution for the broader ecosystem.
Yeah. Moving on, Satya Nadella's recent visit to India has definitely got the startup community buzzing. The Microsoft CEO made some major announcements on the AI front. First of all, he's urging the startup ecosystem to ride the digital wave and innovate like never before. And to support this, Microsoft will offer AI skilling opportunities and training to individuals in Tier 2 and Tier 3 cities, as well as in rural areas of the country. While basic and advanced AI training will be given to 5 lakh students and job seekers, another 1 lakh women will be trained in in-depth AI technical skills training. The Microsoft CEO also urged both India and US authorities to build consensus and cooperate on framing norms to regulate the AI space. And quoting Satya Nadella from the event, he says, India has the tools and policy to manage positive transition to AI. Now, this thing has two facets, right? One, of course, you know, multiple reports claim that Indian talent is the best suited to take the AI innovation forward. And second, the population that India has, right, serves as the bed to test out what AI can do for mankind. And this AI story is growing so fast that, you know, Sam Altman is out there in the market raising funds, you know, to build AI chips and other hardware to support AI development. Guess how much he's out there to raise?
Billions?
No, that's too small. He's out there raising $7 trillion from the, in the market. Oh. Just to give some perspective, that's more than the combined market cap of Apple and Microsoft. Orise Ventures just scored a 45x returns in a partial exit from Country Delight. Country Delight's success story is not just about, you know, the financials, but they've disrupted a very traditional business in India. They focused on quality, freshness and customer centricity, and they have redefined dairy buying experience in the country. They have not only focused on, you know, quality, freshness and customer centricity, but they have redefined the dairy experience and set new standards for the entire industry. Now, the timing for this news could not be any better. So, Orise Ventures' exit injects a lot of momentum in the Indian startup ecosystem, given the funding sentiments. Do you think this renews, you know, investor confidence in the India growth story?
Well, it's a fantastic story, no doubt. And, you know, the past few weeks and months, we were looking for Flipkart guys so that they can give us a party after the ESOP buyback. But now we'll have to look for some Orise guys, right? But yeah, 45x returns, that's a handsome return. You know, just today I was talking to someone about all these funding cycles and they were asking me about, you know, what are people funding right now? What sector seems to be hot? And I feel like, you know, that's always, you're always going to be behind the curve that way, you know? I mean, if you invest because of something right? Something is hot and so on. Because the most amount of value that can be gained is ahead of the curve, right? And it's also equally risky and whatnot. But yeah, props to these folks, man. I mean, Country Delight has done phenomenally well. And it's a old traditional business that has been disrupted. And it requires a level of execution that, you know, that needs to be like really proper, right? Because you're talking about businesses with, you know, pretty low margins on the logistics front, at least, right? And set behavioral patterns and so on. So you're not going to switch your, you know, daily routines that easily. But I know more than a few people who swear by Country Delight, right? The milk and cheese, and they deliver some papers and whatnot also, I suppose, right? So they're vegetables. In a
traditional way.
Yeah. So good stuff. Yeah. Excellent. Yeah.
Hey, talking about Doodh, do you remember that iconic song?
I mean, many iconic songs on Doodh. Doodh hai wonderful, he sakte hai rose a glass of food. That's the one?
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. I mean, every 90s kid remembers that song that played like a half a dozen times a day, I think. Phenomenal. I mean, 90s was such an amazing, amazing time to grow up. You know, pre-internet, Sachin Tendulkar, Bonvita. Yeah, great stuff.
Okay, back to your regular programming now. The Indian Broadcasting and Digital Foundation, or the IBDF, which is an industry body of TV broadcasters, want online streaming platforms to be removed from the scope of regulations of the contentious Broadcasting Services Regulations Bill of 2023. This was introduced by the Ministry of Information and Broadcasting in November of 2023. The rise of online streaming platforms has, of course, disrupted traditional television broadcasting models, challenging established players and reshaping consumer preferences. Excluding them from regulatory oversight could amplify this disruption and impact the industry dynamics. But on the same side, the IBDF argues that TV broadcasting and OTT platforms are distinct and should be regulated separately. The proposed bill aims to bring all OTT platforms under its purview and introduce a three-tier regulatory structure for content evaluation. The IBDF expresses concerns over potential content censorship and urge the protection of freedom of speech and expression. Now, I think this needs to be taken a bit seriously because a lot of, you know, external agencies and bodies have accused of India for, you know, media censorship and content censorship. So what are your thoughts on this development?
Yeah, I mean, this is going to cause a lot of outrage, right? Because so if we back up a little bit, the old bill, or rather act, is one that was drafted in the early 90s, right? Some Indian Cable Television Act or something of that sort. And clearly, you know, the world has come a long way since then, right? Since the last 30 years. So the new broadcasting bill draft that was proposed plans to bring all kinds of media under its purview, right? And that includes digital mediums as well, so OTT and including YouTube, for instance. Imagine our content being regulated, right? Man, that'll be the day, right? So,
what do you mean that'll be the day? Why would we want our content to be moderated?
No, I'm saying, I mean, we can't moderate it ourselves, right? I mean, good luck to anyone else who can moderate this content. But so it'll bring all sorts of actors into the same purview, right? And, anything that will be ruled by committee is going to have its limitations, you know? So if a committee is going to decide what is quote-unquote safe content and what is suitable for people and so on and so forth, it's going to have its challenges for sure, right? My only submission on this is to make it as general and wide as possible, right? And not be really specific and have a proper redressal mechanism in place, right? Yeah. So that people can sort of contest some of these things. Right now, of course, I mean, we're being regulated by the lords on YouTube and other platforms, right? And the redressal mechanisms, of course, are, you know, less than optimal, I should say, right? So should the government consider a bill and an act? Yes, they should, for sure, right? Because there's a ton of content and, media and content can influence nations, right? I mean, we're speaking in the week that Tucker Carlson in the US has interviewed Vladimir Putin of Russia, right? And some people are alleging that this is in time for the US elections and whatnot, right? Be that as it may, right? I think it's right for the government to think of a new broadcast act for sure, right? In terms of the specifics on what they should regulate, how and so on and so forth, I will leave it to, you know, wiser minds to prevail on this, right? Let's see what happens.
Yeah. All right. Now, coming to some Bangalore, or I should say Karnataka news. This is some big development for the ride-hailing sector. Karnataka government announces uniform fare regulations for Ola and Uber. By capping surge pricing, Karnataka wants to make rides more affordable and accessible for all, especially during peak traffic hours and high demand periods. These are efforts to standardize fare structures and prevent price manipulation by ride-hailing companies. Now, well, of course, this means cheaper rides for passengers. But, you know, you really got to think about the driver partners as well, right? Because out of 100 rupees that they make, 30, 35 rupees goes to the ride-hailing company. On top of that, fuel prices are going up. And the amount of money they actually take back home is very highly dependent on these surge pricing or, you know, high demand times. Now with the standardization of fares, you know, I really think their incomes will get affected.
Yeah, for sure. Look, I mean, I think long term, there needs to be some kind of an open platform for ride hailing, right? Because all of us kind of agree that ride hailing is a necessity in any city, right? Mm-hmm. We're not going to go back to the days of calling cabs from directories and whatnot. That's not happening, right? We had, Vimal of Namayatri on the podcast. And, what they are doing is a flat subscription fee. So maybe like a different sort of a payment system emerges and whatnot, right? Because mobility in the city and especially last mile mobility is broken. And we definitely need these services to kind of help us out for sure, right? Having said that, I think the government in Karnataka is acting a little bit like a Soviet style, makeup, right? Because one is the amount of welfare that it's investing in, right? Which has really hit the balance sheet of the government for sure, right? And in fact, so much so that they're asking the center for help as well. That is one thing. And the second is to regulate these things in terms of caps and whatnot. Now, the driver demographic in Bangalore, especially, right, is significant enough that it's a key voting constituency,
yeah.
Right? So I'm sure that there will be some outrage on this, right, in terms of like a curb on the prices and whatnot. To be honest, it's a difficult challenge, you know. I mean, we keep making the point on the podcast that any of these new innovations, regulating them, drafting policy and so on is really, really hard. Right, because there are some second order consequences to this that we just simply can't grapple with, right? So on the one hand, I feel like, yeah, I mean, outrageous surge pricing of 4x and 5x is bad for me as a consumer, right? On the other hand, I feel like the market should take care of this, right? And bear in mind that, you know, the ride-hailing folks are not making a profit, right? I mean, yeah. It's almost
Uber
like
operates on a loss.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, all of these folks are operating on a loss. So it's almost like a public service enterprise in some sense, right? So should they be allowed to make a profit? Of course, right? And will that entail, you know, surge pricing? Well, of course, right? I mean, they do have to figure out a way to do that. I think one perhaps leverage or lever could be, you know, investing in green cabs, right? For example, BlueSmart has been doing that. So bring up the fuel efficiency and so on, right? I mean, just to create a little bit of margin on the rides and whatnot. But yeah, let's see what happens in the future. But because I'm sure that the drivers and platforms will outrage on this.
Yeah.
For once, they'll be on the same side, right? So, yeah.
Okay. All right. Before we move on to the key fundraisers of the week, Delivery has, you know, hit profitability.
Mm.
And this is a big milestone in its journey and a very crucial step for its long-term sustainability. In India, we are seeing e-commerce booming and Delivery's profitability also prompts its competition and to reevaluate their business strategies and how they are maintaining efficiencies across their value chain.
Mm.
So yeah, big moment for the Delivery space in India.
Delivery, of course, has been helping a bunch of small and medium businesses, you know, get their goods and services across the country. And it's a type of business that, you know, I wouldn't envy operating in that. You know, the margins are razor thin, right? And you have to clock precisely, right? I mean, your efficiency has to be near 100% in order for you to make any money at all. So, like, kudos to the management team and kudos on their execution. Phenomenal stuff. Yeah.
Now, let's talk about the notable fundraisers from last week. It has been a good week for the EV industry in general. There's startup River that raised $40 million from Yamaha Motors, AI Few Team Automotive, Lower Carbon Capital and Toyota Ventures. EV-focused NBFC startup MoveIn Green Finance raised 140 crore rupees or $16.8 million from a group of family offices. We have fintech startup which is focused on the mobility segment called Auto Capital. They raised $10 million from GMO Ventures, TurboStart, Prime Venture Partners, Matrix Partners and others. Creator-focused platform Wishlink raised $7 million from Fundamentum and Elevation Capital. And last but not the least, Metafin, which is a clean tech-focused NBFC, raised $5 million from Prime Venture Partners and Varanium Capital.
Mm.
But apart from this fundraiser, there's also a big announcement on the acquisition front. CRED has reached an agreement to buy mutual fund and stock investment platform Kuvera as part of the expansion deal into wealth management. Now, CRED has been rapidly expanding. I think a few months back, they announced CRED Garage to move into the, you know, auto financing space. And now they're moving into the wealth management space. So what do you think CRED is doing? Does it have a business model in place?
Look, it's building for that. You know, this is an eternal question, right? And I'm sure that we've talked about this more than a few times on the podcast itself. Their thesis is to build for that, you know, top 1% or top 5% of spenders and earners in India, right? And so, which is why, I mean, this sort of wealth management acquisition also makes sense for them in some sense, right? So, they've acquired them for obviously the license, which they've also applied for actually,
yeah.
Right? And for, you know, any of these products that they can probably pitch to those customers, right? So, yeah, I mean, it's not as simple as, you know, just acquiring a bunch of products and selling it, right? I mean, because, look, the mutual fund industry is like, what is it? It's at least 30 years old in India, right? And it has its own, you know, it has its own rules to play by, right? And, you know, one thing that, you know, we've all learned from the whole Paytm fiasco is that you have to keep some of these, you know, things separate, right? Interestingly, you know, Zerodha is starting their own fund house as well. So they'll be launching a bunch of low-cost index funds and so on and so forth.
Even Grow has launched quite a few, actually, index funds.
Yeah. So, again, I hope that, you know, they're heeding all the checks and balances required to manage these different parts of their business. Right? But interesting news, nevertheless. I don't know anyone who uses CRED, though, and it could just be my circle. I mean, I don't know if I...
No, I mean, it might be scandalous to say I used to use CRED, but I just did not, you know, see any benefit from it.
Yeah, I used to pay my credit card bills, and then after that, I had like some 4 lakh coins. And
but what to do what with to those do coins? With
buy a sticker or something. I don't know. I don't know. Yeah. But I do know one person who swears by CRED, but that's because he makes ad films for CRED. So we know
who you're talking about.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Let's move on to the talk of the town section. Rajiv Mantri made a very interesting tweet giving an alternate view to a Bloomberg article that quotes, "Modi's thriftiness may end up shortchanging India." But Rajiv says the main point which this article is missing is that India has made great gains on the efficiency side, especially in welfare distribution. He says that India has the best-in-class system powered by digital infrastructure that has no parallels or precedents. Every rupee of welfare spending goes much further than it did earlier, which is a remarkable step. And if there was honesty and curiosity in the community of academic economists and public policy analysts, tomes would have been written by now on what India has achieved. Here is a graph to show what it means. Roshan, can you simplify this for us?
Well, we had the budget recently, and one of the things that struck everyone, interestingly, even folks in the opposition also, was how little was budgeted for welfare and so on. And that too, considering this is an election year, right? And so obviously, I mean, you know, people who have to write against the government for one reason or the other found this as a contentious issue, right? The fact that, you know, the government is not spending enough, right? Which is usually the opposite, right? But yeah, Rajiv makes a fantastic point that, you know, the direct benefit transfer has improved the efficiency of delivery by such a remarkable difference that, you know, the government does not have to do the conventional, you know, big spends of earlier years and so on, right? Not to say that the government is not spending, they have to, but that is the central point, right? And, you know, in the 80s, Rajiv Gandhi had a quote, that's Rahul Gandhi's father, by the way, you know.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah. No, I mean, I can't take anything for granted, so, yeah. So he had a quote that for every 1 rupee the central government spends, about 5 paisa ultimately reaches the end user, right, or the end beneficiary as such. And today that's not the case. I mean, if you look at, you know, credits to farmers' accounts, that is like completely like, you know, taken care, right, with Aadhaar, UPI and so on. And other services as well, right? Whether you look at, you know, your LPG or housing or any of the other stuff, Nalpejal, electricity, Ujwala, all of that stuff. In fact, I mean, I think we should do maybe a video on just the DBT schemes itself. There are plenty of these. And the beneficiaries are immense. I mean, like hundreds of millions of people that we're talking about, right? I mean, so massive scale. So, yeah. Fantastic. I mean, I think definitely explore some of the links that, you know, Rajiv has tweeted, right? It's a great thread, and Rajiv is a great follow also.
Awesome. So I guess then that's it for the 142nd episode of the Startup Operator Roundup. We hope you enjoyed this conversation. And if you are still watching this video, thank you so much for being with us right till the end. Next week, we'll be back again with more exciting news from India's startup ecosystem.
Wait. We have to tell them about the episodes upcoming. We have a conversation with Ranjit Mukundan, who is the co-founder and CEO of Stellapps. So we spoke about Country Delight, you know, about milk and the execution it takes to kind of deliver change behaviors and so on. Well, Stellapps is building dairy farm automation, right? End to end. Again, really, really amazing business. IoT plus marketplace plus SaaS plus bunch of other services all bundled together. I really enjoyed this conversation, and I'm sure you will too. So stay tuned for that. And we're approaching the 150th episode on of the roundup, right? So if you guys have some special requests, if you want, you know, Gunjan to take his top off, or you know, if you want me to play a song, or if you want our producer to do a little dance, all of those requests are kosher. So let us know in the comments. Continue as you were.
All right, folks, that's it. We'll see you again next week. Please remember to do all the good stuff, like, share, subscribe to the channel. We'll be back again next week with more exciting updates. Stay tuned.
See you guys.